City and Long Island are not the only regions of New York talking about trains. Buffalo may also be moving toward light rail. But as Investigative Post reports today, there are plenty of hurdles to overcome between talking about it and actually riding it. Jim Heaney is founder, editor, and executive director of Investigative Post and joins us now with more. Welcome back, Jim.
Always a pleasure, Susan.
So what's the story here?
Well, Buffalo's got about a six-mile subway system. Runs from downtown to the University of Buffalo's old main campus. Carries about 20,000 riders a day. And there's been talk on and off since it opened in the mid-'80s of extending it out to UB's North Campus, which would about double the length, about 12 miles. That effort got a boost a while back when the governor proposed as part of Buffalo Billion 2 extending the rail line, and the Regional Transit Authority has since started doing some planning to figure out which end is up, and Charlotte Keith did a piece, as you mentioned, that's aired last night and is published today on our website, that looks at the many, many hurdles that the project faces.
Now, it's supposed to be very expensive. I get that. Even just the cost of the study alone is $5 million. Did I actually read that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Money's no object, I guess. You know, I used to cover transportation back when I was a young man for the Orlando Sentinel, when they were Orlando at the time back in the early mid-'80s was contemplating building a light rail line itself. And, you know, I got pretty educated on rail transit issues. And that education leaves me very, very skeptical of the merits of this particular proposal for a couple of reasons. For starters, it's been well established that to get people out of their cars requires congestion, and congestion requires population density. Buffalo has neither. I think from the very get-go, this notion of we'll extend the subway line and people will abandon their cars and take the subway line is naive, and has proven to be not successful formula in any number of locations. So,
isn't there another idea behind this, though, to get people who don't have cars to places that have the jobs?
Yeah, and you know, you can do that much more affordably with an improved bus line.
Got it.
Improved bus system. Who's going to be using this? I mean, that's one of the questions, and the NFTA hasn't totally fleshed things out. At least they didn't with Charlotte, but it looks like
that's the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority.
Yeah, at least half the ridership, the additional ridership on this extension, would consist of UB students who are presently taking a bus line that the university already runs. So we're going to basically take those kids and put them on a more expensive mode of transportation to more or less get them to the same places. It just, you know, from a pure economics standpoint, it doesn't make sense.
Well, what are the people who are big proponents of this saying? I mean, they have all the same information that you do. Why do they want this?
Well, you know, another part of the argument is that it's going to spur all this economic development. 8 million square feet of economic development. Now, consider the downtown Buffalo's office market, which is, you know, vast majority of the footprint downtown. Downtown Buffalo has a little bit less than 13 million square feet. So the proponents would have us believe that we are going to build we're going to build two-thirds of a downtown Buffalo along what amounts to a 2 or 3 mile stretch of this extension. The numbers defy reasonable expectations. You know, they talked about how the original rail line was going to promote economic development around transit stops. And My office is actually right on one of those transit stops, and I can tell you that at least two of the transit stops in the city don't have economic development next to them. They have empty lots with overgrown weeds. This notion that if you build a subway, development will come. Again, our own experience here in Buffalo tells us. Now, you know, the subway line that exists in Buffalo, stretches aren't going through the most desirable parts of town when it comes to economic development purposes. So, you know, that's to be said. But really, we're going to build 8 million. And I did the math yesterday. And I can't remember. It's something the equivalent of something like 80 Walmart superstores. I'm sorry, but you know, that's just not a reasonable expectation.
How did the old system, did the system that's in place right now, Jim, did that come with certain promises when it was built, and were those promises of economic development fulfilled?
Well, yeah. There was going to be all sorts of development around stations, and you know, it just didn't happen for a variety of reasons. Ridership, I'm not sure if they met the ridership projections or not, but I know that within a half a dozen years of the system opening, they went into a financial crisis that forced a temporary shutdown of the system until the locals figured out how they were going to pay for operations, which is kind of the third leg in all this, which I find very questionable. Western New York, like all of New York State, is overtaxed. And it has its share of capital needs, particularly as it relates to public infrastructure, water lines, roads, bridges, sewers, things like that.
Yeah, we're an old state.
Yeah, and the city of Buffalo commissioned a study several years back that concluded that its own municipally owned buildings, libraries, community centers, city hall, police headquarters, parks, ice rinks, need more than $500 million in capital improvements. So this region has serious capital needs. Is plopping down a $1.2 billion subway system really anywhere near the top of that priority list? I would argue that it's not, that it would represent a diversion of money that is much better spent on genuine needs rather than what I think this really represents is another trophy project.
It's interesting to juxtapose the conversation that we're having right now about light rail in Buffalo to the one that we're having in Long Island and in New York City about the MTA and the Long Island Railroad, where there is enormous need and density, and people want to get out of their cars because parking in New York City is like ridiculously difficult and expensive.
And it makes perfect sense. It's a cost efficient way of using public tax dollars to service the public. In Buffalo, we do not have a problem that this train extension would solve.
Okay. There's another story I want to ask you about, and that is how the mayor is following up on your lead poisoning story.
Yeah, Dan Telvac has done, somewhere between 20 and 30 stories over the last 3 years on Buffalo's very serious lead poisoning problem. We've got probably the biggest hotspot in the state in Buffalo's inner city. Matter of fact, Reuters did a project that published a couple months ago that identified Buffalo as one of the lead poisoning hotspots in the entire nation. And it took the mayor and the county executive some time to kind of get in gear on this. And last year, the mayor proposed purported to be a very comprehensive approach to identifying houses with lead and getting them abated. And the county executive persuaded his legislature to go out and hire half a dozen additional inspectors and other staff.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this.
Enforcement. Yeah.
So what happened?
Dan reports. Let's do the county first. The county's an easier piece. The county, the fourth quarter last year, added I think five inspectors whose duties include but are not limited to lead inspections. But somehow total lead inspections conducted by the county last year were actually less than they were a couple years back. So we've got more people conducting fewer inspections, which is kind of a head-scratcher. But the real problem is with the city. Basically speaking, City Hall has not really followed through on the mayor's plan. It's been half-hearted, I think, to be diplomatic. Training and certifications that landlords and property managers were supposed to go through to ensure they knew how to identify and abate houses with lead really has not gotten off the ground. A hotline where people were supposed to have a place to call to report cases has received very, very little action, and most of it calls from neighborhoods that don't have lead problems. There's a contractor that's well-versed in lead abatement who told Dan that the problem with the city's approach is it just doesn't have any teeth. And as Dan keeps pointing out, a fundamental problem is that kids are getting lead poisoned in part by lead on the inside of houses. But inspections, for the most part, only deal with the outside of houses. And the mayor has been unwilling to lead the charge to amend city ordinances so that inspectors have a right to get inside houses to inspect for lead. So, you know, it was kind of a flawed approach to begin with, and it has not been very well executed. Hmm. In the mayor's defense, if you want to ask me what the mayor has to say for himself.
What does the mayor have to say for himself, Jim?
Well, two things. You know, the program's, you know, new, and we got to give it a little bit of time, and okay, I'll grant you that. But also that, you know, Dan also reported that the number of lead cases last year in the city, has not decreased. It's been pretty steady the last 4 or 5 years. It's somewhere between 200 and 300 kids a year get poisoned at the level which the city officially considers to be a problem, the state considers to be a problem. The levels at which the feds consider it to be a problem, that number is about 1,000 a year. So we've got a lot of kids every year being impacted by lead. And the mayor's response to that is, well, the numbers may not be going down, but at least they're not going up. To what I would respond is, you've got 1,000 kids a year in the inner city that are being lead poisoned, and you seem to be awfully patient with your bureaucracy. Where is the sense of urgency? Kids are getting poisoned literally every day in the city. Where is the sense of urgency?
So the mayor and his health department's director of environmental health are saying, just wait, there will be some progress, but later down the road.
The county health department is saying, we think we've laid some pieces in place that will result in an improvement. And the mayor is saying, you know, give my program more time. But, you know, in the meantime, again, every day kids are being lead poisoned in the city. And to me, it's inexcusable that there isn't a community-wide response that brings pressure to bear on the politicians to really make this an effort. They should be putting as much effort into abating lead as they are getting themselves reelected.
Jim Haney, founder, editor, and executive director of Investigative Post. Both of these stories can be found on his website, which is investigativepost.org. Jim, great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.